Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Laufer, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NY Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another great episode of NucleCast. Of course, I'm your host, Adam Lowther, and today we have a friend of NucleCast. I'm talking about John Sweagel. Now, for those of you that may remember John spent an illustrious career at the labs, former weapons designer, DOE Intel guy. He did all kinds of stuff. And John has taken some interest, you know, given his intelligence background, to look into, there was an attack in Ukraine by the Russians in which they used a Rubezh missile that, was supposed to be designed to be an intercontinental ballistic missile, but it was used in a conventional capacity. On, I think it was November 21st is when the attack was, and there was some discussion of it, but John's done quite a bit more detailed analysis, and so we said, John, you got to bring that analysis to NucleCast so we can talk about it, because it's an important and sort of underserved issue. So, John, welcome back to NucleCast.
Thank you very much, and just a quick disclaimer. I worked in a nuclear design division for a rather short period of time. And if any nuclear designer were, genuine one, were to find that I was selling myself as such, I'd be in big trouble. So no, I know nuclear designers. I can speak to them. I have run some codes that no longer exist. But Intel, yeah, that was me. Good.
All right. So You use that background. You did some analysis. You written a really nice paper. Can you talk about the attack? Talk about why this is significant, and you know, how do you assess it, and what does it mean?
Really, and there are really three things that stick out at me. So you mentioned Rubezh, but Rubezh is a candidate that has been developed in the past, and I did a considerable amount of work on Rubezh at one time, analysis. Because it was approaching deployment. So I've looked at that. There are other missiles, and I think probably the best thing is to just give in and call it what Putin and the Russians call it, which is Oreshnik. But I've looked at that. I did look at some of the attack. I haven't yet seen a good damage assessment of that attack. So I think I am sure that there are people who are operating behind the curtain who know much more about what happened on the ground. But there are things we can talk about and that are very much worth talking about. And then the third thing is the implications. What's this mean for NATO for the longer run? And so those are the three things I've really been looking at.
Well, then let's start out, you know, walk us through the specifics of the attack itself. Let's start there, because people may not remember or be familiar with what actually happened.
And if you're sufficiently geeked out or just lucky in what you've seen on the internet, you have seen short video clips of the attack. And I'd say it's pretty spooky looking, but I suspect if you're in Tel Aviv on a bad day and you're watching missiles and missile interceptors in the sky, it's spooky. What did you see? Well, there was low-hanging clouds. You saw six collections of things, one by one, come down through the clouds. Each one of those six things came down as six submunitions. So let's talk about six warheads, six submunitions per warhead, 36 things total. Do a little math. This missile, let's say it's carrying a total payload, front end, of 1,200 kilograms. Now, that 1,200 kilograms can be just the business part that hits the ground with pointy ends on it. Or it could be the whole thing with the overhead of control electronics and platforms to sit on and things. So, you know, let's take 1,200, divide by 36, with overhead or not. Each one of those submunitions probably weighed 20 to 30 kilograms. Think about 20 kilograms. Think about going to the gym. Think about the big plate on the free weights that's 45 pounds. That's, imagine that coming at you at 11 times the speed of sound.
Right.
So that's one of the things. So that's number one. You're dealing with that. You can see them hitting the ground in the short video clips that I've seen. There's some talk of maybe an explosion. They were not loaded with high explosive. The Ukrainians have displayed some of the junk that landed on the ground. So these things are bullets. They're not bombs. They're bullets.
They're just using kinetic force to
cause
destruction.
A little math. The kinetic energy of something moving at these types of speeds is proportional to the mass times the square of the velocity. Look at 11 times the speed of sound, square that number, and you got to divide it by a half. There's a factor in there. And the specific energy, the energy per kilogram of stuff coming at you is about 7 megajoules per kilogram. It's a number. Okay, fine. But here's what that means to somebody who's got a background in weapons. The specific energy content of TNT, high explosive, is 4.2 megajoules per kilogram. So you're 75% more than high explosive in kinetic energy, but it's directed. It punches holes in stuff. It can punch into the ground. If it hits hard stuff, it can shatter it.
Yeah.
But at 20 kilograms, even at that speed, it's only going to work up to targets of a certain hardness. They attacked a missile plant. I'm going to guess a lot of the roofs at that missile plant were sheet metal.
Yeah.
Big spaces with sheet metal. You're going to go straight through the sheet metal. The good news is you go straight through the sheet metal. The bad news is you go through the sheet metal and you leave a hole in the sheet metal. So the big thing is damage assessment. Okay. Sabrina Singh, the spokesperson over at the Pentagon, she said, we've been in contact with the Ukrainians looking at damage assessment. TASS said NATO experts have been on site working with the Ukrainians on damage assessment. The Russians like to say the place blew up and was blown down. Even Russian bloggers, and you know, we get a lot from bloggers now, you know, new media, they look at satellite pictures and they say it's punching holes and stuff, but what else? So yeah. We're not seeing the interior of these places. We're not knowing if they penetrated through to basement shops. So we don't fully know the extent. I will say, though, one other thing. If you really want to design a kinetic energy weapon or a kinetic weapon conventional to put on a warhead, you could do better than this.
Yeah. So to walk us through the actual missile because, you know, thus far, you know, the listeners probably know, you know, they understand there was an attack and it was a missile, but you know, they're probably like, well, they get hit by lots of missiles. So what makes this missile special?
Well, number one, the initial statement was that an ICBM had been used in the attack. And so you say ICBM used in attack, heads explode.
Yeah,
and
true.
Because it was an ICBM, for gosh sakes. That's the kind of thing they mean to put on us. Okay, something was launched from a test range in southern Russia, Sarishagan, when they said it was from Astrakhan Oblast, that's equals Sarishagan. So it came from a Russian missile launch point in a test range. And initially, Sabrina Singh again at the Pentagon, she linked it to Rubej. Right. Then the Ukrainians, which I'll come back, I'll talk about the three candidates. Then the Ukrainians linked it to something called Keter, which is meant to be a long range, a long term 2030 replacement right. for their current YARS ICBM. It's an, they're going to have eventually two missiles. They're going to have a solid fueled missile, and they're going to have this Sarmat monster that replaces the SS-18. It'll be liquid fueled and it'll carry a bunch of warheads.
Right.
So anyway, they said it's Keter. It translates as cedar. And then Putin calls it Oreshnik.
Right.
I think it's pretty fair to call it something new, because it's the other two were being developed to carry nuclear weapons. Rubej was initially tested in the mid-2010s to ICBM range.
Now, was that it always meant to be a conventional ICBM? Like a
no.
You know, we've talked about global strike in this country.
Nope. It was going to be deployed. Good question. It was going to be deployed. There was a scheduled deployment initially for 2015 to an Irkutsk base for the Strategic Rocket Forces. And in all probability, it was going to be nuclear armed. Irkutsk is significant because it's the farthest east base that the Russians currently have. And there were two young Chinese bloggers, and you know, you could see their blog, and you could see the two of them asking, why are they putting it just north of us? The Chinese took note of this.
Right.
But all subsequent tests after the first, or the first successful test, were to shorter range to Kapustin Yar. It's the shorter internal test range. Our spy stuff can't see everything that goes on there. And quite possibly they were testing multiple warheads of a new type independently dispensed. There was another interesting feature. One guy said this might be land-basing the Bulova SLBM.
Right. Yeah.
They use higher energy propellant, and it's significant that there was no mobile missile plan for Rubej. But look, Rubej, the clock started running out on Rubej in about 2015. They scheduled it for a new START exhibition, meaning they wanted it to be treaty accountable. They then canceled that, delayed it first, and then canceled it. Then they delayed and canceled deployment to Irkutsk. And finally, in 2018, they said, it's out of the budget. We got finite resources, and the only thing we want to pay for right now is the Avangard hypersonic glide vehicle that they put on an old SS-19 booster.
Right.
Okay, that died. Keter comes along in 2021, and they said, look, we're going into scientific research, different missile. It's going to replace YARS in the 2030 time frame, because we need something better and new. It's like us coming up with Sentinel to replace Minuteman III. They start that. They were just going to transition last year or this year from scientific research to engineering development. They'd reportedly done a couple of tests, according to the Ukrainians. So all of a sudden, Keter's in play. And one thing that's possible, you know, the old SS-20, the scary intermediate range ballistic missile that precipitated the INF Treaty on intermediate range forces, that was a two-stage version of a three-stage Russian ICBM.
Right, yeah.
So maybe it was a two-stage version. And now we've got this new thing, and it's got a conventional warhead, no high explosive in there. 36 submunitions might not have been best. If you do cheap psychology, and this is not what I'm trained to do, and I don't follow Putin at the level you should to take me too seriously, but there always seems to be something of a desire for the super weapon on his part, the transoceanic nuclear powered torpedo, the nuclear powered cruise missile. He likes these things.
Yeah.
So maybe he wanted to throw this one out there, because I think this could be a more effective weapon than it was.
Okay, so it's that time in the show where we have to take a quick break. So we're talking about this attack in Ukraine where we think there was a, you know, an ICBM with a conventional, you know, kinetic munitions on it. And so we're talking about that. Now, we're going to take this break, John, but when we get back, my question for you is, do you think that by virtue of using this weapon, that this was sort of Putin taking a step up the escalation ladder to say, hey, you know, I'm willing to shoot ICBMs even if they're conventional, because the next time they might not be conventional? So that's the question. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Join the ANWA Deterrence Center team and exchange monitor at the annual Nuclear Deterrence Summit, January 27th through 29th at the Crystal Gateway Marriott. This year's summit features speakers from NNSA, U.S. House of Representatives, the U.S. Senate, National Laboratories, the U.S. Department of Energy, Department of Defense, contractors, and more. Sign up through the link on our website to receive a 15% ANWA Deterrence Center discount at anwadeter.org. We hope to see you there.
Okay, we're back, John. So I posited a question for you in, you know, it's capability at times will is our deterrence calculation. And sure. So when we, and communication, you know, that's our sort of third component. And so do you think this was really sort of an effort to message, you know, let's say Donald Trump, we the Americans, NATO, or is this just, hey, it's a capability he's got and he wanted to use it, thought it might be, you know, effective at taking out a discrete target that he wanted wanted gone.
I tend to take a broader view of messaging. He's not, you know, look, he didn't write three words on the side of this missile the way the assassin did in New York City. But there is a message, and the message is perhaps broader and more diffuse, but a message nonetheless. The other thing is, I'll come back to escalation. Right. What's the message? Okay, look, 15 minutes to Dnipro from Russia. 20 minutes, I think they said, you know, you can go back and look at this. 20 minutes to London. So they have demonstrated a weapon that gets there fast, gets there with damn little warning. And if you look at some of the special features of the Rubej development, which were some of which have been passed along to both Yars and Keter, you can independently deploy these warheads. You don't have to spit them off one bus. You give them each their own engine. You can get some difference there. You can do depressed trajectories at shorter ranges, comes faster, doesn't necessarily meet the predictions of your missile interception software. And look, this isn't intercepting a theater range missile. It's going faster and it's coming at you faster. So that's number one. He's got this new capability and it could be conventional. What do you get? Look, imagine you could make a warhead that disperses, say, 50 kilogram or 50 gram particles, metal pieces, right, over 3 to 7 acres. Imagine you're taking on factories with soft roofs. Imagine you're taking on an airbase where the aircraft are out in the open. Usually they put them in hardened bunkers, but if they're out in the open, imagine you shoot it at a government complex and it's stealing glass.
Oh, absolutely.
Those things are going to go through the window. So you have added a kinetic capability, and think about your space of footprint, the size of whatever it is you're going to affect, and the hardness of the target. And you've added some space in there in the general space of all of your weapon systems. Now, is it intrinsically spooky that it's an ICBM? Look, they're doing what we plan to do. They're using strategic bombers to deliver air-launched cruise missiles. The KH-101 is is conventionally armed, but the KH-102 is not terribly different. It comes from the same bombers, comes from the same base, and it's nuclear armed. So, you know, they're doing something here. I think this, you know, you could almost ask, does this make nuclear use in Europe against NATO more or less likely? You can argue less likely by the fact that you've expanded your conventional target space. But then you got to ask, is an IRBM, these are intermediate range missiles, does an IRBM cost too much? You know, is it cheaper to use drones nowadays, clouded drones? I leave that to people to do the calculation. It's that 20-minute arrival time, very little warning, that makes this significant. Is it a total game changer? No. I mean, look, it's just one more scary thing that you've got that you can use against the opposition.
So if I were to try to pin you down and say, you know, John, tell me what Vladimir Putin specifically meant. And you know, I'm the president and you're briefing me and you're telling me, and I'm like, damn it, John, what did this mean? And you have to come up with something. What would be your absolute best guess as far as, you know, in terms of communication?
Well, I mean, number one,
no hedging.
No. Number one, he's saying, look, it's not lost on me that you're developing intermediate range hypersonic missiles. And if you're going to do that, just let it be known. We can do this to you. And it doesn't have to be just Kinjal. It can be a ballistic or a long range, an IRBM that can hit all of Europe. Let it be known. And look, it's absolutely, these things could be armed with nuclear warheads and they arrive just as fast. And they're just as hard to shoot down today. So he sent in a message, we're expanding the space of things we can use against you. And Putin deals in fear. I mean, a constant threats. And so it's another threat, and it is a threat with some meaning. So, what does it say? Well, it says you want to do missile defense. Okay, fine. Here's another thing you got to defend against. Can you handle this with the equipment you've got today?
So you don't see
here the leadership of these other countries.
Yeah. Do you see it as, you know, because one of the things I was reading some article yesterday, and it said that it made sort of this argument that Donald Trump is already a shadow president. And, you know, the argument was basically that because he was elected and, you know, sort of this transition process, that people are already sort of looking to Trump and saying, you know, even though he's not the president now, I'm going to take actions that essentially conform to, you know, what it will be like when Trump is in office. And so I wonder if you think this was specifically targeted at shaping how Trump, who has promised to bring an end to the war in Ukraine, and apparently, you know, he's also told Bibi Netanyahu in Israel that, hey, you need to bring this conflict in Israel to a conclusion. Do you think that this is sort of more specifically targeted at Trump and shaping his negotiating effort when he comes to power and starts to try to work a conclusion to the war in Ukraine? Go ahead.
Well, at the highest level, Donald Trump would like to bring an end to this war. And I think even Zelensky has begun to signal he'd like to bring an end to this war. If you just look at the weight of the two sides and what they're bringing against each other, it's not necessarily a disservice to the Ukrainians to bring the war to an end. If anything, a weapon like this, if Donald Trump needs to convince anybody in Europe, and I'm sure there are people who would only be too happy to bring this to an end. I mean, some of the earlier work between the French and the Germans in the Minsk agreement, they were horrible. So the thing is, I hope this isn't, this gives Donald Trump a bit of leverage himself. And does that mean he's making common cause with Putin? No, it doesn't. Confluence of interests, bringing the war to an end. It's how do you bring it to an end? And are you going to sell Ukraine down the river? I hope not. I hope it's not used to sell Ukraine down the river, but I hope it's used to bring war to an end. It's leverage in that regard.
Yeah.
Now, but that's commonality of interest with different longer term strategic goals.
Yeah. So it's that time in the show where I bring out Bob the Genie, and as I rub my magic lamp, of course, Bob grants three wishes to all guests. Now, we've had a sort of a different kind of talk than we normally would have. So, of course, Bob only grants wishes related to our topics. And we've had a relatively narrow set of discussion today. So, John, as you make your three wishes, you know, Bob's only going to grant them in regard to our discussion. So what's your wish number one?
Keep it in perspective. And NATO met immediately after this, and they kept it in perspective. And if you go back, let me hype you a bit. If you go back to your talk in, what was it, February of last year with Chris Yaw, talking about Russian low-yield nuclear weapons.
Right.
Chris put that in perspective by saying this doesn't mean this has to be used or that it necessarily all by itself is a game changer, but that it does change the range of options and possibilities that can be brought to bear. This right. changes, this adds an option, and this adds an option in a way that for the time being might be thought-provoking for people who live in NATO capitals.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
So keep it in perspective.
Keep it in perspective. That's so don't sort of overinflate its potential value.
Well, it's something. It's not nothing, and it could be in against certain targets a very interesting concept. Okay. Covering 3 to 7 acres, is not nothing.
True, true enough. True enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's wish number one is keep it in perspective. What would wish number two be?
I guess since it was, I think we want to keep it in nuclear perspective. This could have been a nuke. This could have been a nuke, but it wasn't. It may actually reduce a few of the circumstances under which you would consider a nuke versus a conventional. But we want to keep that in mind. Holman Jenkins had a really interesting piece in which he talked about the codependent relationship between Putin and his nuclear threats and those in the U.S. who want to use them for one reason or another, to get rid of nukes or to make more nukes. And we have to keep this one in that perspective as well.
Okay. All right. So keep it in its nuclear perspective, wish number two. Now you're down to your final wish. So what is that final wish?
Well, I think that we have to, you raised the issue of escalation. No, you'll notice that there is an intellectual pushback against the over-focus on simply escalation.
Okay.
I want people to get back from this thinking of nuclear weapons as somehow just objects that play in an escalation space and get back to thinking about them as possible weapons of war. That makes some people's blood run cold.
It does, but yeah.
The other side deciding to use the nuclear weapons, this is one thing. Let's think about this. The nuclear taboo is a real thing, and it keeps people from using nuclear weapons now. And the nuclear taboo will mean something until it doesn't.
Right.
And when it doesn't, there could be a rather, it could be a dam bursting in a certain sense. I mean, it doesn't mean all hell's going to break loose, but it could mean that all of a sudden non-strategic nuclear use is something that's more thinkable once it begins to happen.
Yeah.
So I think
we
may potentially
come to the realization that just because you have a, you know, one or a small number of low yield tactical nuclear weapons, that it does not inherently mean we will go to strategic nuclear war.
Well, it doesn't. And the other thing is, the analysis really needs, and a couple of years ago in Omaha, maybe you were there too, I think you were.
Yep.
The two of the military attachés from northern NATO countries, one of the Baltics and the Norwegian was particularly good. They said, we really have to think about conventional nuclear integration.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And this is just one more thing that says we've got to think about that. And again, get out of this abstract escalate, not escalate thing. These weapons have a real function. So let's think of them in terms of their function and think of them in terms of the relative value of conventional versus nuclear. Chris talked a lot about magazine depth, but nuclear weapons aren't free either. So there's a lot for military planners to think through. It's a whole new space for them to break into.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was then your third wish? I think we sort of
That's my third. That's okay. My third. Let's begin to think about weapons like this, the dual capable weapons and the nuclear conventional integration even more, because again, when the nuclear taboo will mean a lot until it means nothing. And that's not, I don't believe that has to be a gradual transition. That might be a rather rapid transition.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I just want us to be prepared. I mean, do I want to give nukes a chance? I don't want to go on record for that.
Sure.
But I think we have to be prepared for the eventuality.
Yeah. Understandable. I think that's sort of what we would all expect, is to, we have to be prepared.
Well, yeah. And I'm not sure we are fully as much as we need to be.
Yeah. So
as people who got that bomb damages, they got the BDA for NEPRO and they got more information than you and I have.
Yeah. So as we sort of wrap up this sort of interesting and winding discussion about what did the attack of a conventional, you know, it was a ICBM, Russian ICBM. We've talked about its origins. We've talked about sort of the conventional munitions that were used, kinetic strike. You know, it was just objects using kinetic force to do damage on a missile facility. And we sort of wandered back and forth on what does it mean? Why did they do it? What are they trying to say? So in, you know, 5 or 10 seconds, as our listeners are kind of contemplating this discussion, what's the message you want them to walk away with?
I think that the message, you know, it's probably an IRBM, but the message to walk away with is they've got something. They can get to you real fast, tens of minutes. They can get something to you real fast. It could be carrying nuclear, really bad news. It could be carrying conventional, that against certain classes of targets, threatening government complexes is not nothing. Now, would the Pentagon be vulnerable to this? No, you've seen the Pentagon. No, they have Kevlar windows, but there are places that would be, and that means something. A financial center in London, on India docks, you know? So there's something new. It's fast. It can be threatening to certain sets of targets. It could be nuclear, but they got lots of nuclear options. The Russians do not want for nuclear options. Yeah. This just has a faster delivery speed than a lot of the others and longer range.
All right. John Swingle, thanks for joining us on NucleCast.
Yeah.
And thanks to you, the listeners, for joining us on this episode, and we'll see you next time. It's always great to talk about John. He's one of the smartest people I know. He's always got, you know, 5 different things going on at the same time in his head. So following his conversation is always a task that's fun and enjoyable. But hopefully you understood the point he was trying to make in terms of you know, this is another option. It's not necessarily an imminent threat of, you know, nuclear, you know, it's going to be nuclear armed next, but it's something to take into account as we, you know, observe and try to understand what Vladimir Putin's doing.
This has been a production of the Anwa Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Grunthal. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NuclearCast.